The entertainment world has lost one of its most original and most imitated comics.
The king of the one-liners, Henny Youngman.
What a crowd. If I had blood, I'd blush. Downtown, I said to a lady, you know where Michigan Avenue is? She says, yeah. And she walked away. One fellow said, give me $10 till payday. I said, when is payday? He said, you ought to know. You're the one that's working. One fellow said, I haven't eaten in 2 days. I said, you should force yourself. One fellow said, I haven't tasted food all week. I said, don't worry, it tastes the same.
Henny Youngman died yesterday at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Manhattan after a bout with pneumonia. He was 91. For more than 6 decades, Youngman did it all. Vaudeville, speakeasies, the Borscht Belt, Ed Sullivan, nightclubs, casinos, and sometimes even bar mitzvahs. He never tried to keep up with the times, and there were plenty of periods when younger people thought him hopelessly square. But he'd been Henny Youngman for so long, he was hip. Terry Gross spoke with him in 1991 when he was 85. She started with a question you've got to ask Henny Youngman. How did he come up with his famous one-liner, Take My Wife, Please?
I was on the Kate Smith Show at the time, and my wife came in a half hour before the show. Henny, I need 8 tickets for the show. Luckily, the ushers saved some tickets for me every week. I used to give them $2. That's all I had left. So I got the tickets for Sadie, and I said, take my wife, please. Like, get her out of here. I want her in the audience. And that stuck all these years.
Do you still have jokes in your repertoire that go back to your days in vaudeville?
Sure, I do the same jokes now. I need a new audience. That's all I need. Yeah, I'm always adding.
What are some of the ones that go back to
I take my wife everywhere, but she finds a way home. I said, where do you want to go for your anniversary? She said, I want to go somewhere I've never been before. I said, try the kitchen.
Now, how did you start doing, you know, jokes that basically, you know, insult women?
Well, I tell you, they're cute. They're not insults. They're cute, but we have to bounce off somebody, you know. You have to make fun of my brother-in-law. You know how he gets rid of his garbage? He gift-wrapped it, leaves it in the car, they steal it. How long are you going to wait to laugh, Terry?
Oh, I had to think that
one
through
explain,
first.
Yeah, I know it. I got to explain the jokes to you.
Now, there was a time when you were performing at speakeasies for a lot of gangsters in the audience.
Oh, yeah, that was Alito, Venice, and Patterson. My boys used to stab me good night. The check room girl's name was Rocco.
So in that routine, you used to do a lot of insult humor.
Yeah, I do. I always insulted the gangsters. They liked it.
What kinds of jokes?
If you had your life to live over again, don't do it.
Why did gangsters like insult humor so much?
Well, if they like it, they'll take anything from you. If not, you get your head broken somewhere, you know. I heard them plan kidnappings. I kept my mouth shut. I minded my own business. But they let me sit with them all the time. They liked me, luckily.
Did you like them?
Yeah, they weren't bad fellas. Well, they were murderers and thieves. But around a table, they were nice, you know.
Now, early on in your career, you say you stole jokes. Who'd you steal them from?
I didn't steal them. I took them. I didn't have to steal. They're public domain.
How often have jokes been stolen from you over the years?
Oh, thousands. I put 30 guys in business. When I was on the Kate Smith Show, I had 7 writers. So every week I told 26 jokes that went out in the air. And a lot of comics started from those routines. They couldn't afford writers. They were all amateurs at the time. Buddy Hackett, Jan Murray, Red Buttons, all these guys started in business with my jokes.
What's your most stolen joke?
Take my wife, please. You hear that all over the country.
But everybody knows that's yours.
Yeah. So I think I'm associated with it by now.
But what about a joke that's been stolen that people don't realize is
Well,
yours?
I do all the wife jokes and the brother-in-law jokes. They take them every day. A hooker walked up to me. She said, I'll do anything you want for $50. I said, paint my house. That's around the country now. I brought that around, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Henny Youngman.
King of the one-liners.
Yes.
Mention that. That's another thing. Walter Winchell gave me that line.
Yeah, and tell the story of that.
Well, Walter Winchell, I used to sit with him every night. You know, I was starting out, I hung out at Lindy's. I got to know all these columnists, Jack O'Brien, Walter Winchell, Leonard Lyons. And these are the people that used to make you famous. They would put you in their column constantly if they liked you, attached to a joke. And that's how you built a reputation those days. And Walter Winchell gave me a title, King of the One-Liners, and that stuck. So now I got Take My Wife, Please, King of the One-Liners, and Henny, Where's Your Fiddle? I play fiddle.
Now, I'm going to ask you to tell the story of how Ed Sullivan banished you from the show for 5 years.
I had spent $5,000 on new jokes that weekend. I had money to spend. I really wanted to be good, you know. One of those things, you hit the whole network, you want to be good. But I spent $5,000 and gathered a lot of jokes. So I knew them pretty well. I hadn't done them before, but I got them ready to do them that Sunday. He calls me upstairs, take this joke out, take this out, take this out, take this out. I got on stage. I didn't know what I was doing. I really was a mess. He broke up my rhythm. He broke up my routine that I had learned. I came off and I called him a dirty bee. I said, you amateur night son of a bitch. How dare you do this to me? 5 years I was off there.
You write in your book about how you still work the phones all the time. And it sounds like, you know, if you're at the Carnegie Deli, the phone rings for you. In the barber's chair, you're calling.
Wherever
about
it is,
days.
I let people know where I'm at.
Yeah, no.
In case you need me for a job, you know where to get me. My service knows where I am at. I left word when I came at the studio here that I'm here to get my phone calls.
Have you gotten any calls yet?
I don't know. I'm talking to you.
Let's ask Leszek, the engineer. Leszek, has he gotten any phones yet?
Just one.
He's got one phone call already?
Yes.
Who's it from?
It was a gentleman who didn't introduce himself.
Oh, okay. Well, who knows what that's going to be,
yeah,
right?
I get calls all day.
Now, here's what I don't understand. Don't you have an agent or something?
Sure, I have the William Morris Agency.
So what do you have to get the phone calls
because
for?
Because I like to do... Many years ago, I used to call agents to get jobs when I wasn't known. I had to let people know I'm in business. I do sales meetings. I do trade shows. I do conventions. I do outdoor fairs. I do commercials. So I had built up a business before I went with the William Morris office. I let people know where I am, how they can get me. They tell me how much they want to pay me. They send a half a deposit, and I do the job.
Now, you know, I've heard that you have a listed number in the New York directory. So just,
sure, I don't owe any money.
Yeah, so just to test it out, I called New York Information earlier today, and I said to the operator, operator, I'd like the number for Henny Youngman in Manhattan, and the operator said, the Henny Youngman? And I said, yes, and the operator said, he would not have a listed number. I said, no, no, but I think he does, and sure enough.
That's astounding, you know, because people think you haven't got a number. That's no good. I want them to know I have a number so they can get to me.
But don't the people who really need to get to you for business reasons know
yes.
how to reach you?
Sure, now they do. You're letting them know.
Now, if I call that up, would I just get an answering machine or would you
no,
pick
you
it
get
up?
My service.
Oh, I see. Oh, no wonder you could give it out so liberally.
I don't care. As long as I don't owe any money.
Are you doing any topical jokes in
Very
your show
seldom.
Now?
No, not uh-huh. too many.
You have a great Imelda Marcos one in the book.
Yeah, well, I did it, but she's in Israel planting a shoe tree.
Yeah, I really love that.
Yeah, well, that was topical. It's still good sometimes. But I try to get jokes on a topic at once. Now, I'm just saying, now, Liz Taylor's been married 8 times. She has rice marks on her face. I did that about Zsa Gabor. But now that she's doing it, I use it on her.
Now, do you do all your own jokes now, or do you have writers who are doing them?
No, I haven't. I haven't got a steady job. I don't need writers. I got 2 hours of material in my head. I go out on the stage, I do 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
You're still telling Take My Wife jokes?
All the time.
How do they go over now?
Fine.
Yeah, still in the age of the women's
sure,
movement?
Sure, my wife and I are always holding hands. If I leave, go, she shops.
How did your wife when...
My wife was a pretty woman. She didn't mind what I said about her. She ran after the garbage man. Am I too late for the garbage? She said, no, jump in. My wife didn't know I worked at these gangster places. She would have been frightened. She didn't mind it at all. She didn't know what I was doing. I had conflicts with my wife all the time because my wife was a day person. She wanted me to have a job 9 to 5. I got lucky, and I got in another business which she knew nothing about, and my family resented it. Her family resented it. They thought I was a bum because I hung out in Lindy's till 4 in the morning. They never heard of Lindy's. So I had that to contend with all my life until my wife finally accepted me coming home late at night.
So the marriage withstood both your jokes and your wife's lack of understanding
of show business. Yeah, sure. Well, I wouldn't leave my family. I wouldn't leave them. And she wouldn't leave me. Where would she go? She had 2 kids, you know. So we had a lot of fights and arguments over these things. Making people understand what you're doing is very tough,
mm-hmm.
especially when in my business.
Now, what about your parents? Did they ever understand?
No. How would they understand? I was playing people. If I didn't take them to New York, I don't think they would have gone. They lived in Brooklyn.
No, you got thrown out of high school, right?
I was asked to leave, yeah.
What for?
Telling jokes or breaking up the class. Teacher thought I was a nuisance. He could have laughed, but he was an idiot, I guess.
So when you were thrown out of high school, what did you do next?
My father made me learn a trade, printing. I went to Brooklyn Vocational Trade School.
So how did you go from, you know,
I don't know.
Trade school and all this
I had
to,
a band. My father made me study fiddle, mm-hmm. my mother.
Well, they wanted
My aunt gave me a fiddle. Her son didn't want it.
They wanted you to be a great classical violinist.
Right, sure. And I studied 7 years. And we had a comedy band like Spike Jones. And one night, an act didn't show up, so the boy said, Henny, you know a lot of jokes. You got to save my life. I got a banquet out there. I went on. I told all my jokes. I did a half hour. I was a riot, really. I had a lot of funny stuff. He said, let the band go, will you? I'll keep you. So I became a comedian.
And when you were getting started and you were trying to, you know, convince people to hire you, where would you go?
Well, I went around all the agents in New York. There were booking agents.
Uh-huh.
There were buildings that had booking agent on the door. So I'd walk in and introduce myself. Some of them used me, found out it was funny, and that was it. I got around. I got jobs here and there. Got jobs with the fiddle. I got jobs telling jokes.
Would you have to do shtick for the booking agents in their office?
Well, I used to come in. I usually come in with a joke of the day. I used to find a joke and tell it to them. They laughed at me, and they got to like me, you know. You got to prove you're a comedian. You can say it, but you got to prove it.
You know, a lot of interviewers like to ask the tombstone question, what would you like written on your tombstone? I myself never asked this question, but to you, I'm just curious if you want a one-liner on yours.
Well, I really never figured that out, honestly. When I lost my wife, I used to say, take my wife, please. That's the one time I didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
I'll have to figure that out, what to say on there. Leave them laughing. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you. When you come to New York, call me. Take my number.
Please.
Please. I'll take you to the Friars for lunch.
Oh, boy, I'd really love that.
Yeah, you might enjoy it. Hey, Terry, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, and
it's
I wish
a pleasure,
you the best.
Really.
Henny Youngman spoke with Terry Gross in 1991. He died yesterday in Manhattan. He was 91 years old.